at the time of wars and rumors of war. How in the world are we going to have any real optimism about the potential for world peace when all nations will begin, as the Bible says they eventually will, to beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks? Forget about the business of melting down all the tanks and attack carriers and attack helicopters and hovercraft into tractors and lawnmowers and movable temples. Maybe it's time we ask that question. Because if you look at history, and I thought all history should only be that method by which man catalogs his mistakes, it should only be that method by which we learn from the mistakes of the past, not to repeat those same mistakes in the present and for the future. And if you look at what has been happening since 1945, when the United Nations was established, after nearly 60 wars now, during which, in nearly every case, one of the member states of the United Nations was a participant, and you look at all the plans and the pacts and the treaties that have been signed, the new treaty now between China and Japan, the emergence of a 10-nation bloc of gigantic power inside Central Europe, the growing diplomatic status, and sometimes virtual hostility and irritation on the part of West Germany and her trading partners and Japan against the United States. It does give you pause. It makes you wonder. As you look at the United States gradually diminishing in the second or third or less class power status, as you see that the pride of our power has been broken to the agony of Vietnam, and a kind of a post-Watergate complex of belief that there is not one single organization, not one politician or public figure, not anybody who is honest, not anybody who can be trusted. What is your own personal hope when it comes to your own personal thoughts about our chances for world peace? Do you believe it's possible in any context in the world today, the way you see the world going? What about the Middle East? What about the Arabs and the price of oil? Southeast Asia and the domino theory, which proved to be true in actuality. As one nation went, so go they all in the communist world. What about Korea and the potential for new war there? And what about the Soviet Union and communist leadership, who have never abandoned their desire to bury us, who have never abandoned their program for total world domination of the communist system? Have they really backed down and have they changed the very basic building blocks of the communist system in the first place, which advocates the overthrow of the Western powers? Are they good people now? Because we talk about détente, which is a word that means vastly different things to the Soviet Union than it does to the average man on the street in Britain and the United States. In 1945, the United Nations was established. It is hailed as the last chance for world peace. What have we had since that time? Oh, you can't begin to count all of them. It would take me several more programs to even begin to tell you the names of the wars, to even list the nations that have participated. And to talk about the wars that are going on now, and there is no such thing as a small war to those who are the participants. If you talk about international terrorism, guerrilla warfare, the attempts at insurgency in nation after nation, those are existing governments. If you talk about the almost pendulum-like shifting of governments around the world, including some of the major nations of the world, where governments have been toppled up by scandal, payoff, bribes, infamous acts of leaders in government, why, you've got to include even the United States, Britain, France, West Germany, and Japan. The major nations of the world have had leaders, premiers, prime ministers, and presidents departing from their positions of power in absolute dictability within the past 5 to 7 years. If you went from 45 to 47, when the Marshall Plan was established, organized, to the Rio Treaty of 1947, where the United States said it would assist any of the nations of the South, Central and South America, including Mexico, if they were attacked. In 1948, the Organization of American States. In 1949, the NATO Treaty. The Southeast Asian Treaty of 1954. The Republic of China Treaty of 1954. Yet later on, national Chinese were kicked out of the United Nations and communist Chinese were invited in. By 1963, we had a limited nuclear test ban treaty that became effective on October 10th of that date. And that was the same 1963 when President Kennedy was assassinated. By 1967, we had the Glasgow Conference, where President Johnson and Soviet Premier Kissinger agreed not to let any crisis push their nations into nuclear war. In 1968, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty where the United States, the Soviet Union, Britain, and about 60 other countries agreed to prohibit the spread of nuclear weapons. But yet the United States itself has continued to build nuclear reactors in countries around the world, in Africa. Of course, you know about the one at the moment in Israel, which has been grinding away for 20 years, and the rumored disappearance of the shipment of uranium in the Mediterranean, all the shipload, which of course nobody ever discovered what happened to that. In 1971, there was a seabed treaty, which was a treaty prohibiting the installation of nuclear weapons on the seabed beyond any nation's 12-mile coastal zone. Now, of course, most nations are claiming a 200-mile coastal zone, but that treaty was signed by 63 countries. In 1972, SALT I became law, SALT standing for Strategic Arms Limitations Talks, and both the Soviet Union and the United States agreed to limit deployment of defense nuclear weapons to two sites each. Isn't that interesting? We have enough nuclear overkill for about 50 world flight hours, and we have agreed to limit the deployment of defense nuclear weapons to two sites each, one for the capital and another for one missile site. Crazy, crazy, crazy ideas, and we think they're going to work. The United States put a signature to that, though. The United States land-based ICBMs were frozen then at 1,054 plus 656 sub-launched missiles, just barely enough to obliterate about 40 or 50 warships. The Russians allowed a total of 2,350 of them. That's 1,600 ICBMs to our 1,054. Unbelievable. Plus, of course, about 740 sub-launched missiles. What an agreement that was. In 1973 came the Vietnam Peace Agreement to end the Indochina War, the Vietnam War. And the United States charged that none of those terms were kept by the Congress forces. And about 100 or more points to the treaty that was hammered out during all the peace talks, during which the bloodiest battles of the Korean War were fought. Bunker Hill, Heartbreak Ridge, Bloody Ridge, Fort Chop Hill, all those battles were fought during the days of the peace talks in San Juan Jones. And yet, after that peace treaty was negotiated, the communists broke within a matter of months practically every single one of the agreements they had set their signatures to. And you remember of the years where we have had some bloody occurrences along the border? There was one occasion where a couple of U.S. officers were hacked to death with an axe, as I recall. And we didn't do anything except send them a nasty note. What is the value of a peace treaty between and among nations? What was the value of Hitler's non-aggression pact that he signed with the Soviet Union? What was the value of the German pact in 1936? Well, actually, it harks clear back to 1925 and 1936 with the demilitarization of the Rhineland, and promptly German troops marched in and took over the Rhineland. You know, the real value is discovered by looking into the Communist Manifesto. One of its 10 cardinal points of communist philosophy is expressed like this, quote, "Promises are like pie crusts. They are made to be broken," end quote. That is a part of communist philosophy. They believe in that philosophy. They use that philosophy in working to achieve their own ends in every single parlay or conference in which they take a part. Now, in 1974, we had SALT II. And when Nixon and Brezhnev signed agreements to limit the size of weapons tested underground and to limit the ABM defensive deployment to one site each. Well, what happened to that? Well, we found out that ABM was monstrously expensive and that finally the whole thing was canceled. Yet we spent billions, hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent in the old tired gun versus butter issue as man searches for a way to discover world peace. We've had every conceivable plan, every conceivable new and great society, every training agreement by which nations can learn through cultural and athletic exchanges and by limited trade and the like. The United States is, on one hand, a partner in trade with the Soviet Union. Tourism within certain restrictions is allowable. We talk about détente, and yet at the same time we know that the Soviet leadership is the implacable enemy of free men, and they want to enslave the world in a vast global communistic system. And they have not all to do precisely that. Well, as I said in the last program, it about drives you crazy trying to keep touch with who for who and who is against whom. In World War II, the United States vanquished, together with the Western Allies, principally Britain, the nations of Germany, Italy, and Japan. Today, we are supposedly firmly allied with the nations of Germany, at least West Germany, and Italy, in the confines of the common market, chief and major trading partners, and Japan. But the Soviet Union and China are against each other. And the Soviet Union and Japan are against each other. But Japan has signed a treaty with China, its natural trading area. And India is fearful of Red China. And India is in the United Nations and a friend of the United States, but India rarely ever votes for the United States when issues come before the General Assembly. The United States finds herself alone in the General Assembly with little tiny nations such as Ireland, the country no bigger than a small East Texas town, and their total population that have the same vote in the General Assembly as do the great nuclear powers of the world. What do you think our chances are? How would you assess it? How would you appraise it? I ask, you've heard of all these other plans, but have you heard of the plan of God? Now, don't disintegrate into laughter before you hear the rest of it. Few realize that Jesus Christ of Nazareth was the greatest prophet of all time, that he brought a message nearly 2,000 years ago about how world peace is possible. It's possible by getting to the root cause. We're here dealing all the time with the effect of the problem and not the cause. What is the cause? The Bible describes what is the cause of war. What brings war about? What is the root beginning cause of war? Why can't people get along? You could begin in your own home and look at yourself and your wife, your neighbors, people of other colors and races inside your own political entity who are of a different ethnic or religious aspect or idea, philosophy than yours, a race. And you can ask that question yourself and probably answer it. Why can't nations get along? You ought to write to this article right away on World Peace is Possible, and the book is called The Real Gospel. That shows what is being done about the condition that a last-ditch, last-warning witness and message must be gotten out, not only to the Western world of the United States, Britain, Australia, Canada, and the Western democracies, but to all the world as a witness prior to a time the Bible describes as great tribulation, a time of the greatest chaos in the history of the world. Write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525, Tyler, Texas, 75710. For that article entitled, World Peace is Possible, because it is possible, but it's going to require a complete change in human nature. And that's not going to happen short of vast, cataclysmic, global upheavals. Write for that called, World Peace is Possible, and Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525, Tyler, Texas, 75710. If you'd like the telephone number, you can dial area 214 in normal working hours in this simple time zone, 214-561-2525. That's area 214-561-2525. Or write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525, Tyler, Texas, 75710. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.